What is actually the risk of having a baby over 40, or how does your pregnancy maybe change with its level of intervention?
A lot of fear in the conventional system about your age, you know, geriatric pregnancy and all.
I am not under the impression actually that it's that different. I think it has to do more with your overall health. I also know many 43 and 44 year olds that are healthier than the 32 year old. Welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I am your co-host, Dr. Morgan McDermott, and this is the show for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Leah and I share the natural women's health and motherhood guidance that you've been looking for through our fresh, functional, and balanced lens. We love to share the nuances, and this episode is full of them. So today we are talking about pregnancy over 40, and then we do touch a little bit too about birth and how that can change in these later years. Basically, the overall stance is that there is more risk in certain areas, which I lay out all of the statistics, and then we talk about what that actually means in practice. What are my recommendations specifically for how maybe some things that I would say a woman over 40 who's pregnant should do almost always that I wouldn't say everybody should who's under 40? And how do we kind of mitigate or work with these risk factors? How do we think about them in order to choose to do this or not? And a whole lot of other things. So you're going to learn a lot in this episode. This was a highly requested one, and we hope you enjoy it. So let's dive in.
All righty. We are back with part two of our Over 40 series. We did a fertility over 40, and now Dr. Morgan is going to teach us everything that we need to know about pregnancy and birth over 40, because you get asked this all the time, and it makes sense because there's a lot of fear in the conventional system about your age, you know, geriatric pregnancy and all. So why don't you just kind of take it and tell us what we need to know?
Okay. Yeah. So this is the part two. Last part was all about fertility. You guys go listen to that because it actually, there's a lot of overlap and things that I think are important to hear, whether or not you're already pregnant, but I think it's a good one. Then now you're listening to this. Okay. So we need to understand that due to many factors, women in over 40 are having a lot more babies now than they did back in the day. So the statistic that I found that I cited in the last episode was like in 1986, the birth rate of women over 40 was like 3.8% of babies were being, you know, of all the babies were of women over 40. And now it's 12.5. Another way to look at this is that between now and 1990, the amount of babies being born to women over 40 has almost doubled. So wow. It's just like a lot more of that, of, you know, whether because of career and work or infertility or choice, whatever it is. So the reason why this can feel different, and people ask me questions about it, or they'll say, you know, is your 6-week pregnancy call course designed for women who are over 40, who are in their more advanced maternal age, da, da, da. And what I like to say just in general, just to like say the statement, is that like you, I am not under the impression actually that it's that different. I think it has to do more with your overall health. And yes, as time passes, there are cumulative negative health habits that can change, and body breakdown is natural and real, and our DNA changes and our telomeres shorten and things happen. But I also know many 43 and 44 year olds that are healthier than the 32 year olds or something. And so these are like when I'm going to cite a bunch of statistics about risk factors just for the knowledge of it, you know, what is actually the risk of having a baby over 40, or how does your pregnancy maybe change with its level of intervention and things, but it's so individual too, on so many factors. Now, one thing that does seem to be not as individual to health and lifestyle factors is some of the chromosomal things, because they are happening at a phase that is more to do with DNA and not like the full epigenetic picture of somebody, you know. And people who are in their early 20s can have babies with chromosomal issues as well. But this is kind of the main thing. Like when I was growing up, the only thing I thought was different about a woman having a baby later on in late age is that her risk of having a baby with trisomy 21 or Down syndrome was so much higher. Yeah. And it is higher, but there is other stuff that can be higher too, or different or change. And we're going to talk about recommendations and even some of the benefits of having babies in your, you know, late 30s, early 40s too. So Let's just go from here. So this is actually a situation. Overall, I think the NIPT, so the non-invasive prenatal testing that people can get in their first trimester, it's a blood test. I've never done it. I've never done it with my pregnancies. And the reason being is that up until this pregnancy, I was relatively young. So now I'm 36. So I'm advanced maternal age. I mean, it's advanced maternal age at 35, which is so dumb. And maybe my baby has something going on. I don't know. But it wouldn't change my trajectory. So if it would change your trajectory, I do think that maybe that information is good to have. I also, there is some false positives that can come up on the NIPT or some ambiguity where people get very stressed or they're pushed into different interventions to confirm a diagnosis that may not actually be there. And I'm just not interested in that because I'm like, if there's something really clearly wrong, we'll hopefully see it on the anatomy scan. And if we don't, then we'll see it at birth and we'll deal with it then. And I do see, this is my personal, okay, like if I had a higher risk though, if I was like 42 or 43, I probably would do the NIPT. So what I'm saying here is that I do suggest the NIPT to women over 40 because the chances are so much higher so that maybe you actually do want that information and would maybe want to look into some of the confirmatory testing or the multiple data points with like the nuchal translucency test at 11, 12, 13 weeks, which is like a specialized ultrasound to look at a measurement in the back of the neck that if it is a certain width, it has a higher likelihood of being associated with with trisomy 21. So it's like, okay, say your NIPT says, you know, your alpha fetoprotein is a bit out of range. We're like, okay, we're worried. Now your nuchal translucency is also consistently pointing in this direction. Now at the anatomy scan, maybe you don't want to do a amniocentesis, which would be the confirmatory test to test the fetal DNA. But at the anatomy scan, we're seeing some of the markers of trisomy 21. And during the rest of your pregnancy, you want to use that time to prep for what is it going to be like to have a baby like that. I get that. I can see that that would be beneficial because being surprised by the whole thing would make it all maybe more traumatic or scary or, you know, just feel like a lot, more of a learning curve.
Yeah.
So everybody's going to have a different opinion about that. I think it surprises people a lot because I do love data points, but I don't do the NIPT. So there's
and
that.
What the NIAPT for people who don't know is, what is that? Is it a blood test?
NIPT,
it's not where they poke
your
belly, right? Because that's the
It's just a blood test. And it's something that people can, sometimes people don't even know that they're doing it. They're just, their doctor's like, we're going to draw your blood today and we're going to do
it. And this is the test for the baby's chromosomes, or what is it doing?
Yes. It's testing for chromosomal abnormalities in the baby. And it also will tell the sex of your baby. So if you don't want that, you have to kind of like tell them to not report it or cover it up or something. It gives you a relative risk based on like alpha fetoprotein and a couple things. So it's not perfect, you know, nothing is perfect. And we never really know until the baby is actually in our arms, but there are signs that something could be wrong. So let me just break down some of the statistics. The chances of having a baby with Down syndrome, trisomy 21, when you're 30, are 1 in 900. When you're 40, it's 1 in 100. When you're 45, it's 1 in 30. So these chances go up dramatically. Okay.
And what do they say why? Like, I know with cancer, it's the amount of times, like cancer areas are high where there's high cell turnover because there's that many more chances for the DNA replication to go wrong. Do they know why in advanced age it shoots up so dramatically so fast?
That's a good question. Maybe they do and I don't. I don't know that. I'm
okay,
sorry.
I know everything.
Yeah, I should. I'm
just curious. Yeah, because that's a big difference between 900, 1 in 900 at 30 and 1 in 30 at 45. Wow.
Yeah. And there is two other more prominent trisomies, trisomy 18 and trisomy 13, that are not as likely as trisomy 21 Down syndrome. They're also often fatal. They don't make it out of the womb. A lot of babies don't. And the chances of those happening does increase as age goes on, but not at all as dramatically. So I didn't even want to like cite the statistics around that. You can look into it. But so we do need to understand this, that, okay, so 1 in 100 babies are going to be born with trisomy 21 if you're 40. If you're 42, it's 1 in 60. If you're 45, it's 1 in 30. So there is that risk that you need to talk with your partner about or with yourself or who, you know, and have a kind of come to Jesus. We know that we are taking on this chance and like it's still important for us to go for it or it's not or whatever. Okay, now twins, a lot of people are very worried about twins when they get older or sometimes they want it. But actually, it's interesting because as you get older into your 30s and as we approach 40, there is a higher likelihood of fraternal twins, which means we drop two eggs. But then it doesn't just keep going up after 40. Like the chances of natural twins, or at least we don't have those statistics because assisted reproductive technology skews these results, where then when we're looking at a twin birth rate, it's like so much higher between the 45 and like early 50s people because they are doing reproductive technologies. They're taking medications that are going to cause them to drop more eggs. They're implanting more than one embryo because they're sort of expecting one of those embryos to not make it. And then maybe they do make it, et cetera. So we don't actually know the natural twin rate between some of those like later 40s ages because it's the data is overall skewed because of, you know, assisted reproductive technologies. But I would just say that, okay, between 30 and 34 years old, 33 babies out of 1,000 will be sets of twins. Then when we look at like between 40 and 44 years old, 34 babies are twin sets. It's a very small increase in that. This is just general. This isn't looking at anybody's family dynamics and family histories or, you know, things. You know what I really want to know? Actually, I'm just going to say it here. I don't know if I have said this on the podcast. If you or anyone you know has a set of identical twins, and this is the invasive question I always ask. I've asked people this at weddings and on airplanes and at the park and all sorts of things. And you would not believe, I wish I was keeping notes, the number of women who have a set of identical twins who'd had a miscarriage the month or two or three prior. So to me, I'm finding it within a 3-month window prior to their conception of their identical twins is so statistically high in my little like tiny cohort of study that, you know, that I've done. So as you're hearing this, if you know somebody, you're like, oh my gosh, my cousin has identical twins. I'm going to go ask him. Go ask him, did they just have a miscarriage right before? And if they did, please write me because I'm going to do some more research on this. I need to know. I think that there's something connected there.
Totally. It makes sense. I mean, probably for the same reason why older people, theoretically older women, could potentially drop two eggs, because it's kind of like the system is not short-circuiting a little bit, but it's trying to find its new balance again. And so having the egg, you know, split, which is what happens with identical twins, or even maybe drop two eggs, I feel like could happen more post-miscarriage because the body's like, wait, what? Like, I was just pregnant, now I'm not. Like, what's happening? Yeah, crazy.
Totally. It's interesting. You know how like you get targeted on Instagram of different algorithms and stuff. And when I got pregnant this time, I was so seeing all these twin things, but then specifically I was seeing triplet things. And then very much more specifically, I was seeing identical triplet things, which are so rare because that means one egg split into two and then one of those eggs split again. So they are all three.
Wow.
Identical triplets though. I mean, how crazy is that? That is
crazy.
So wild. Okay. So there's that about twins. It's actually not all that high unless you're doing assisted reproductive technologies, and then it's very high. Okay.
Yep.
Miscarriage rates. This is more significant. So this could be for many different reasons. It could be because the egg quality is lower and our progesterone is struggling a little bit. So maybe it's a progesteronic effect. Maybe it is a different kind of chromosomal effect, you know, like where it's not even, it doesn't have a label. It's just like when the egg and sperm came together and they were trying to do their splitting, there's a lot of oxidative stress. There's differences in the DNA now. We're a little bit older. Like these things do happen. And the baby was not ever going to make it. It's like an earlier miscarriage, or it's a, even a like blighted ovum. It didn't start developing properly in the first place. It's a, what's it called? When it's like really early.
Like a missed miscarriage?
No, like when it's.
Like a chemical pregnancy?
Say it again.
Like a chemical pregnancy?
Yes, chemical. Yes. Yes, chemical pregnancy.
Like, I don't know. There's so many names it could be.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So there's different, you know, ways that this can come to be, but let's just look at the statistics and the numbers because I don't want this to scare anybody. It's just, you need to be realistic about what's going on. And I do think this is an area of suggestion as well, that everybody should test their progesterone when you get pregnant if you're over 40. I also, I know we have like a progesterone episode. We'll put that in the show notes. We talk about progesterone a lot in the part one of this two-part series. And so listening to that, I think, is important to get some of the why, because I'm not going to talk about the why right now. But there are, you know, things that are happening. Okay, so your average miscarriage rate between 20 and 30 is like 9 to 17%. Okay, that's quite the range. It's a big range. Somewhere between 9 and 17%. Okay, now when you're 35, that risk is 20%. Okay. When you're 40, that risk is 40%. When you're 45, that risk is 80%. These are the numbers reported by ACOG in a clinical summary. So that's quite high, 80%. Mm-hmm. Probably though what's happening in those pregnancies over 45 are that they are medically managed by assisted reproductive technologies, and they are on medications, like they're probably on progesterone, they're on these different things that are going to manage that miscarriage risk as much as possible. They've chosen an egg or like an embryo potentially, that's of higher quality so that it's going to account for that. I'm assuming that some of these are skewed where we don't really know, are those pregnancies over 45 from ART or are they natural? I don't think that we know that data. It's mm-hmm. all kind of lumped together. So, a bigger data set, that was by ACOG, a bigger data set says that the miscarriage rate is the lowest around 25 to 29 years old, and that it's at 10%. Okay, so before it was like a 9 to 17%. So this one's citing all of the numbers on a lower end, and this is a very large population data set. So I think it's almost more important to look at this particular mm-hmm. data set. They say that age over 45 pregnancies, that the miscarriage rate is 53%. So that's a lot better odds than 80%. Mm-hmm. And I think that would make more sense too. Like I'm not hearing women that are over 45 having a miscarriage rate at 80%, but again, maybe they're not telling, maybe you're just not even hearing about it because it's happening, but 53% would seem reasonable and make sense to me. Mm-hmm. So we do need to understand, okay, so we have a much higher percentage chance of miscarriage. So some of these chromosomal things, twins rates, miscarriage rate. Now, some of the pregnancy-related things that can happen, like gestational diabetes, preeclampsia, intrauterine growth restriction, those sorts of things. Let's talk about that. So just in general, as you age, your chances of hypertension, so having high blood pressure, are increased in general, okay? The baseline percentage of gestational hypertension, which is a new onset of hypertension that the woman did not have before she got pregnant, but also lacks the features of preeclampsia, which is like systemic organ breakdown and struggle with protein in the urine and swelling and things. It's just that she has hypertension and none of the preeclampsia things. Mm-hmm. That overall just baseline percentage is 6 to 8% of pregnancies, regardless mm-hmm. of age. Now, when we look at the bracket of women between 35 and 40, there's like a 1.3 to 1.6 increased risk of gestational hypertension there. When we look at the women over 40, it's more like 2 to 2.5% increased risk. So you're 2 times more likely to have that hypertension that starts in pregnancy, not because you had it prior. So that's just interesting because that can be something that is coming about. Now, preeclampsia, which is mixed with a hypertension picture and multi-system organ involvement, if you're over 40 and you're getting pregnant compared to being under 30, you have a 2.4 higher risk of preeclampsia. Mm. So this is one of those things where it's like, okay, do we take aspirin? I'm 43, I'm pregnant. Do I take aspirin every day to prevent my preeclampsia risk? Maybe you do, because preeclampsia can change a lot of things later on. And the aspirin does seem to work pretty well. Mm-hmm. It's a bummer. You have to take it early. I think it's between 14 and 17 weeks. You have to start mm-hmm. it. So you're not going to have symptoms then. You're doing it for prevention. And there is some aspirin's not like a super, super, super safe, but I've never heard of anybody having a complication with taking aspirin for preeclampsia risk reduction. And if there's multiple factors that are on board, when you look at the preeclampsia risk factors, which I'm not going to list out right now, but you can go look it up. If you have multiple of those factors, I think let's do anything we can do to reduce the risk of preeclampsia. And that might also mm-hmm. include aspirin, because preeclampsia is gnarly and you could be mm-hmm. delivering a baby way too early or have a lot of serious complications.
Yeah, and it can also help with miscarriage if clotting is a factor, which isn't necessarily an age-related thing, usually more of like a genetic thing, but can be.
Yeah, you're right. If you don't start until 14, 17 weeks, you're probably missing the clotting factor window, though, of miscarriage.
Yeah, that's it would be like if you started it earlier.
Yeah, earlier. Okay. Anyway, placenta previa. This is kind of confusing to me. Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure why. Well, actually, I have some reasons why, but it still doesn't really make I'm not like, oh, ding, 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 that makes total sense to me. But placenta previa, actually, the risk goes up a lot when you're over 40. So your general population risk of placenta previa, which is where the placenta is so low lying that it's covering the opening of the cervix where the baby is going to come out at birth. So there is no way that the baby can be born vaginally. And I'm talking about a complete placenta previa in this statistic, not a partial, not a low lying placenta. We were talking about full on placenta previa. The risk in the general population is 0.3 to 0.5% of pregnancies. So it's quite rare. And that's good because this could be, you know, this is fatal for mom and potentially baby or both. Or sorry, baby for sure. Mom also probably because she would lose so much blood. But between 35 and 39 years old, that risk increases 1.5 times. And when you're over 40, it increases 2 to 3 times. Now, still though, those numbers are going to be overall pretty dang small because the overall risk is small. It is interesting though. And the reason why we think this could be happening is partially because of the higher rates, again, of assisted reproductive technologies. We don't really know how to tease apart that, that factor. Okay. There could be also, as just age is related, there's like these vascular changes that are happening. There could be more prior uterine surgeries happening in a woman. Like maybe she had a prior cesarean. That is one of the highest risks of having a placenta previa is a prior cesarean. Or even just like, you know, a fibroid removal or an IUD that kind of scraped some things around and changed the intrauterine environment. There also is a higher risk of placenta previa when there's multiples, which we know also can increase in age because of assisted reproductive technologies, and smoking. So again, vascular. There seems to be like this vascular side of things, and then there's sort of like medically induced and then prior surgeries that would make for this placenta to have a higher likelihood of implanting very low to the point where it's covering the exit.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, now gestational diabetes has a higher increased risk, which is interesting. So over 40 pregnancies compared to under 30, you're going to have a 3.7 increased risk, 3.7 times increased risk. So we need to, but this makes sense. This is like, this is blood sugar. This is adrenal glands. This is the way that we are managing everything. So we have to just be in our like best health sense possible. Actually, all of this, if I could just pause and say this really quickly, I think all of this just draws us to say there's a lot of health factors and habits that we can have in pregnancy that we should be doing because we want to have a good, healthy pregnancy. And I think if we are in our late 30s or over 40, we need to be doing all those things, but kicked up on all the notches. So we need to be like really much more conscious, stricter about our diet, stricter about doing our workouts, muscle building, like weightlifting, things like that, that we know are going to mitigate some of these risks in general. Now, and if you can't do that because you're like, oh, well, here I am, Iron Man, that's okay. But if we're planning it, if you're those that are listening to this and they're going, that's probably going to be me, or, hey, we have a couple kids, but I want to have one more and I'm going to be in my 40s when that happens. Okay. Like you can totally do this.
Yeah.
Okay. Intrauterine growth restriction where the baby is small and maybe needs to be born early because there is potentially a placental insufficiency or something that's happening there. Is 1.5 times increased risk. But actually, as we know now from the placenta episode, which we will link in the show notes, a lot of that is coming from dad. So that might be because he is older, not as much you. I mean, it can be a vascular thing from mom, but a lot of it is also the health of the sperm and how the paternal genes latch on to the uterus basically right away and how all of the vasculature is created in those early, early days of pregnancy from the paternal genes.
So crazy.
So crazy. As we're talking about birth and postpartum support, I want to share an underrated tip with you. That tip is to continue taking your prenatal. Pregnancy and postpartum are the most nutritionally demanding phases of a woman's life. Many women stop taking their prenatal after birth, but we recommend taking it for at least the first 9 months postpartum or the entirety of the time that you're breastfeeding. My favorite prenatal is Needed's Prenatal Multi, and it's the most robust formula that I've seen in the market. It contains bioavailable nutrients in their evidence-based dosages, well above the bare minimum that a lot of prenatals settle for. Their quality standards are top tier with transparent third-party testing and over 10,000 practitioners now recommending the brand. And now we have the results from their IRB-approved clinical study that confirm the results of what we've been seeing clinically. Women who take the prenatal multi have significantly higher blood levels of critical nutrients for pregnancy and postpartum. This includes vitamin D, B6, B12, riboflavin, vitamin K2. Only women in the Needed group reach the adequate, sufficient levels of vitamin D. Vitamin D plays a big role in your immune health, your mood, and your energy production, all things that are really important during your postpartum season. And while there's many different ways that you can support yourself postpartum, continuing to take your prenatal is a really simple, easy way to cover all your bases. It's one of the most impactful habits that we can have, and Needed makes it easy. Learn more about the study at thisisneeded.com/thrive and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Yes, healthy mother, like a little affirmation for yourself. Okay, so preterm labor, I hear about this when people are really worried, and it's only a 1.5 increased risk compared to people under 30. Now, one that is a bummer that I hear about all the time is induction of labor, cesarean risk, the way that it changes birth. Okay. Mm-hmm. A lot of this is because of stillbirth risk increase. So the numbers are very interesting, though. They like to say that it doubles. And here's what that actually means. Between 30 and 35, your risk of a stillbirth, just in a general Joe Schmo pregnancy with no other risk factors, is 1.02. Okay, so like very low. Your risk of a stillbirth, sorry, yes, 1%. Okay, now when you are between 40 and 45, it's 1.6. And when you're over 45, it's 2.2% chance that your baby is going to be born stillbirth. So, or stillborn. And so, yes, I guess it doubles, but it's still such a low chance. And the amount of women that are pushed into early inductions, sometimes at like 39 weeks because of the ARRIVE trial, which is, you know, a very well-established to be in a bunk kind of bad study that was not done properly to show anything clinically relevant actually about induction risks. Induction benefits, I guess I should say, or even at like, you know, 40, 41, like I know so many women that are above 40 years old and their doctors will not entertain them going a day past 41 weeks. And it's like, we have a whole additional other week there. And yes, as you do become, the gestation increases, there is a higher risk of stillbirth as well, but still the compounding factors are not such that it's like, wow, this is really scary. Now, maybe over 45, maybe, but the vast majority of women over 40, quote unquote, having children are still younger than 45.
Yeah.
There's so many that are like in the 40 to 43, I would say, is like the vast majority of them.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. And now also the cesarean rate. So a woman in her 20s has an average cesarean risk, all factors, you know, just in general of 28% to have a cesarean. And when you're over 40, it's 47% chance that you're going to have a cesarean in your birth. And so much of that is because it could be, you know, also the body is maybe having a bit of a harder time doing the whole thing. But I don't know. It's not like you're 85. Like, it can't be that. I think it's because they're inducing them and their body's not ready. And then the slew of interventions.
And a lot of people who do ART, so IVF in particular, are often just put on the path of C-section no matter what. They're like, oh, you did IVF, so you're going to have a C-section. And there's really, it's a lot of it is just you're put in a bucket, not necessarily that it's medically indicated.
Yes, yes. It's just, I don't know. There's not a reverence for birth. There's not an importance of spontaneous labor and the way that that goes. And so they think, well, we induce people all day long, whatever, it's fine. Like, this is how we get babies out and they're alive. So that's what we want. We want an alive baby. And it's like, at the expense of what though? Like at the expense of the, and also that baby had a really, really good chance of being alive still had it been born just spontaneously.
Yeah.
So it's that one's, I tell people when I'm asked this question and I'm, you know, It's individual for their risk factor, of course. Excuse me. But I tell people, if there is, you have no complications, you don't have gestational diabetes, you don't have preeclampsia, you do your stress tests. Yes, you're going to go and you're going to get your non-stress tests, your biophysical profiles, starting at 40 weeks, probably when you're older and you're pregnant. And I think that's a good idea. Why not? Let's go. I mean, usually I do say, if there's no factors that are leading us to want to do that, that incidental findings that push birth interventions are high. We need to be like ready to say either no, or, you know, especially when they're like, your baby's big and it's like, okay, yeah, thank you. But if they go and there's like no amniotic fluid, or, you know, baby's heart is having a bit of a hard time or something is kind of funky there, then cool. We get that information now. But if nothing is happening and everything is Joe Schmo and status quo, that's a t-shirt, Joe Schmo and status quo. Then why not just allow your body to go into labor? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not an OB. I guess I'll never know that. But it does feel like we should be, again, looking at the person in front of us. So there, you know, there's that. I am kind of flying through this episode, but it's more just a statistical conversation and my general view, which is pretty short to sum up. I have still some things to say, but I'm just,
yeah, you know, what would you say? I mean, those are all really good stats, because I think it's important for people to know. And people do scare women, you know, with these numbers of, oh, you're going to have a stillbirth baby. You know, they don't really realize all these things, but it is important to know what does increase, especially the rate of Down syndrome, which I know I should know this. I'm a doctor. I took stats and stuff, but you don't think it would be because the sample size is so much smaller for women over 40 that it makes it seem relatively more likely? Or how do they account for that? I'm assuming they
have to account for that.
So many pregnancies, though.
It's still risk.
In the 30s. So I don't know. It just seems it's maybe true. I mean, I guess I do know quite a few people that have had pregnancies that are older that have kids with Down syndrome, but these things are just important to know. But what do you tell people generally if someone said, you know, how late is too late? Like, is the risk worth the benefit? Like, how do you kind of have that conversation when people are kind of wondering? I think there's a lot, at least in my field, of panic, you know, as they start to approach 40 and there's this weird ominous feeling of like, I must have my baby before I turn 40 and like I have to get pregnant. There's so much pressure that they put on themselves. And just what kind of thing, pretend that I was a woman who asked you that, what would you say?
Yeah, I mean, I basically say the same thing to everybody, which is I am always going to be pro have the baby if it's on your heart. But you have to be able to still want that in the face of some of these increased risks. Because there are, you know, like I think about how this might relate to me is like, if I knew I had twins, would I still choose to birth at home? Even if like Idaho was a supportive state of that and I had a midwife at home, like what would I do? And I know so many of our friends would say, yeah, without a doubt, I'd have my babies at home for sure. And I don't know if I would. I think I maybe would want to choose the hospital just because. And I would choose a vaginal birth. I would totally go vaginal, but I'd probably be vaginal in the OR. So, you know, it's just everyone is going to have their different method of how they're going to look at all of this and say what to do. Now, the question I get specifically that is, okay, I had a baby at 36 and 38. We want another one, but I'm still like breastfeeding or let's say they had a baby at like 39. And so they have like a younger baby still. And they're like, well, I'm still breastfeeding. I know that a bigger age gap or like having time for my body is better, but I'm feeling the pressure of time. I feel like we just have to cram them in together. What do I do? Should I wait? Should I da 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 da? And so what I say to those situations is have the baby. Like, yeah, is it ideal to have a bigger gap? For sure. If everything is in place, like you don't have any major health in it, things, then go ahead and try for the baby. Let's knock it out. You know, let's try to push it into the earliest 40s that we can. But do I think that the benefit of waiting for like a 3-year gap and now you're 43 and you're trying to get pregnant again is worth it for the fact of having the gap and the fact of having weaned first and the fact of having sort of a break? No, I don't, because of these risks. Yeah. So I always say, if you're in the later, you're kind of cramming your family building in at the end, then just cram it. It's okay. Yeah. They're going to be close together. You're probably going to be really tired. It's going to be a wild first couple of years. But I think that having the baby in general is better, because if the longer you wait, you may not get pregnant. You may not, you know, things like that happen. So I am a like bust them out if that's what we have to do. And I think that surprises people, because I do love the break. I do love people to wean first before they get pregnant if they can and have a little bit of time, but not in that situation. If we need to just get them going, then we just get them going. So here, let's talk about some of the benefits of having babies in your 40s. Perfect. Which is that there is a statistic, which is that there's a couple of different ways to look at this, but the correct way to look at this is that people keep seeing this stat thrown around. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's like, you're more likely to live to 100 if you've had your last baby in your 40. Okay, but here's the thing. It's not that like having a baby in your 40s is going to be an independent factor to increase your longevity. It's that the fact that you had a late fertility still, it's a marker of longevity. So the fact that you had a baby in your 40s.
Great. That's a great designation.
Yeah, it's important. It's a really important frame shift to look at it. Because you had a baby in your 40s shows that you have a later fertility, and that is just associated with health in general. And so you have a higher chance of living to be 100, and it's 4 times more likely chance to living to 100. if you had a baby in your 40s at some point. So we need to just
that means you're just healthier. And yes. That's what we're talking about in the fertility episode too, is you being able to get pregnant after 40 depends solely mostly on your health. Yes. And if your health is good then, you know, you probably have the practices, the genetics, all the things in place that would allow for you to live longer. So that makes total sense. I didn't even realize that. So that was a great reframe.
Yeah, exactly. I think people love to see that and say, oh my God, I'm going to do this because I want to live to be 100. And it's like, well, if you can do it, then you're four times more likely to live to 100 because of that. But it's not that. Okay. So whereas another statistic that's cool is that for every baby you have and for every baby that you've nursed, you do have a relative risk reduction of breast cancer. And mm-hmm. this is that way of the frame shift. Like every baby you have increases or decreases your chance of breast cancer by 7%.
Wow.
And it's cumulative. So like you have two babies, you have a 14% reduced chance of having breast cancer for that factor of having two kids. Now, for every set of 12 months that you have nursed that baby, there's an additional 4% risk reduction. So like for me, I'm going to have had five babies. So 5 times 7 is 35% chance risk reduction. And then if I've nursed them all, like let's just round it to 18 months. So that's 3 years, 3 years. So that's 6 years, six. So 7.5 times 4. So like, let's just say 28%. So 35% plus 28% risk reduction, whatever that number is. Yeah. That's big.
That's huge.
So that is the way that you can look at that. That the more kids you have and the longer you nurse them, because of the breast cancer estrogen, the cycling, when you're pregnant, you don't have a cycle. You don't have an up and down of estrogen. When you are breastfeeding, often you don't have a cycle, or you have a lower hormone profile, and it's this up and down, and the spike in hormones and the spike in estrogen, blah, 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 that is at least contributing to some types of breast cancer. This may not be every single thing, but I do think that that's really fascinating.
It is fascinating.
Additional benefits that you may not have thought about for having a baby over 40 would be that you're more experienced and you've had your life experience, and also that you're maybe more financially secure, which can feel really good. You know, your career is set. You're not going to be like jamming out, hustling, career building like you and I are during raising our babies, which is a lot of stuff to be doing.
It is.
So those are just some different frame shifts to look at this, some of the benefits too. And I mean, to me, I'm pro build the family if you want it. And you know, but you also have to be down for those risks, you know, like, so like even I'm not down. So Wes has joked about having a sixth. We're pregnant with our fifth. And I did clarify with him the other day that he's not very serious about that. He's just been kind of poking at me, but he had said we'd have to do it back to back. And I am not willing to do that.
Yeah.
Because I have done that before and it was not worth it in my mind. Well, I don't know. It's not that it's not worth it. She's not worth it having that third so close together. But already having five, like I don't feel the need. I don't feel, but if I had only had two and I wanted a third and I had to jam out a last one quickly, then I would. But I don't feel that pressure or need. Like I'm 36. Why would I? But I'd have to be doing that because of his age. And so that's just like, I don't know. It's to me, I'm like, no, I feel totally content with five kids. That's a lot of kids.
Yeah.
And a close age gap is not friendly on my body. So,
and one other thing, which this is really morbid, and even though we talked about the benefits, which are beautiful, the other benefit I want to just highlight is maybe more years of therapy and more processing. Not everybody who's older is more wiser and processed, but it's potential. So you could raise your children with, you know, a little bit more intention. But a flip side that I don't see a lot of people thinking of who come to me for fertility is there is this idea of, you know, I'm not that old and people are 40 and they just think that they're 20 in so many ways in their mind. And I love that for them. You know, I love that for their energy and for everything, but also being mindful because I've had patients who their husbands are maybe like 15 years older than them. And, you know, they just don't really think about it much, but it's like, okay, you're going into pregnancy, like, how healthy is your partner? Like, is there a reality that you might not have a support, you know, from the time this child is maybe like 10 on, or like they're going to be very old when they graduate high school. And like that, it's not that that's a bad thing. You just, most people are like, oh my God, I've literally never even thought about that. Like,
yeah, you have to, exactly.
The idea that my husband's going to be 80 years old when my kid graduates high school and like his health isn't even very good right now. Like you might be raising this child either by yourself or, which is so morbid to think about, you know, but
no,
I,
but it's true. And that's, I mean, true. That's where we're at with my family even is like Wes is 44 right now. How old would he want to be? You know, I know, and some people are going to say, oh, we don't care. Like it's, yeah, we don't totally care. And that's okay. Cool. Good. Yeah. And some people are like, oh my God, I would never have a baby past 40 because like, I want to be done. I want them out of the house so that I can travel. And I want to have my babies really young so that, you know, I have like, it's funny being closer to 40 because like, I know some people who are grandparents and they're, you know, and they're in the like early 40s and they have grandchildren because they had their initial kids so young. Yeah. And it's just, it's a wild, some people are trying to get pregnant for the first time. Some people are in the middle of it. Some people are grandparents. Like, but yeah, you do. You need to think about where is your line. Like for Wes, his line is like basically now. It's soon. And it was the main factor of maybe not having a fifth for us was because he was like, I don't want to be certain, you know, past a certain age. And I get it. It's like, okay. But I also would be like, if again, if we'd only had like one kid and he was 44, we would still have more kids. Mm-hmm. It's just that because we already had four and he's like, you know, I'm good. Like we're don't even keep going, but everybody's going to have a different. And some 48-year-olds, 49-year-olds are feel younger than other versions of 38-year-olds, 39-year-olds, you know, whatever. So
totally. Did you know proper hydration and mineral balance are key for hormone health, fertility, and preparing for pregnancy? This is why Dr. Morgan and I love Relight by Redmond's, the real salt people. A USA-made electrolyte powder with unrefined sea salt, over 60 trace minerals, plus bioavailable forms of potassium, calcium, and two forms of magnesium, malate and glycinate. These minerals support hormones, hydration, energy, and overall health. The best part is they taste delicious. I'm really picky about how things taste, and so you can rest assured this is Dr. Leah approved. I love lemon lime, but I know Dr. Morgan is a strawberry lemonade gal. Head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% off your order of electrolytes, real sea salt, natural toothpaste, and so much more. Again, head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15%. Happy hydrating on your womanhood and fertility journey.
Okay, so some recommendations overall, and then we'll pop off here, is that, yeah, so I do think that, like I said, we need to think about all of our other health factors that we're doing in pregnancy. We're eating really well. We're eating high protein. We are taking all of our supplements. We're exercising, reducing our toxin load. We're getting really good sleep. All of that stuff that you would normally do status quo in a pregnancy as best as you can needs to be ramped up in the preconception and the pregnancy of an over 40 pregnancy because of some of these different health things of just age and being older. And again, as we said in the fertility episode too, how many women do we know who had relatively unhealthy 20s and 30s and then they kind of found health and wellness and started working out and getting really strict with diet and cut out some things that they didn't know they had low-grade constant inflammation to, which unfortunately is gluten and dairy for a lot of people. You'd be shocked how many people would lose so much weight from just inflammation, like water weight, carrying interstitial fluid because there's a constant inflammatory response going on in all of the cells of their body when they're eating these foods every day. They don't even know that they're intolerant to it until they take it out and then they bring it back in and then they're like, oh, what is this? But anyway, how many people accidentally are getting pregnant in these like perimenopausal years because they are so healthy and their body is like primed now to get pregnant again. And it wasn't maybe beforehand, or maybe they did have their babies, but it was kind of like hard and whatever. Now they have this like big age gap or whatever. Okay. It happens all the time. So do not think like you can be lax about whatever birth control you're using or cycle tracking because it just, you just can't. Okay. So anyways, I do think we test our progesterone always in populations over 40. Additional ones, like, you know, if you're breastfeeding or if you just had a miscarriage or if you're having any kind of like cycle issues that would indicate low progesterone, we have a low progesterone episode. You can listen and learn all about that. I do suggest the NIPT, which is the blood test in first trimester, and an early ultrasound of some type. You could just do the nuchal translucency if you were worried about chromosomal things, and that can happen at like 11, 12 weeks. And the reason for this too is to count the number of babies that are in there. Yeah. The twin risk isn't as high as we have seen, you know, or we think, unless you are doing assisted reproductive technology, and then the twin risk can be very high.
Yeah.
I say risk. It's not a risk, likelihood. You know, twins are great, but just to know how many babies are and where they are and all that. To be exercising and preferably lifting weights at some point. It doesn't have to be heavy weight, but like, you know, in your preconception time, if you have the chance to do it, and throughout the pregnancy, walking a ton. And yeah, just an ending note to reiterate what I said earlier, which is that if you have to bust them out because you had your first at 39, 40, and you want to have a sibling and now you're 40, like you just do it. You do a short age gap and it'll be okay. Like it's okay if you can, you know, and it's like what is sad, what is hard for people is when they're like, okay, I have a 9 month old. I don't even have a cycle back yet. I'm feeling really the pressure to get pregnant again. What do I do? And it's like, okay, well, the first step in that, and I have we'll write this in the show notes too, is the like getting pregnant while you're breastfeeding still episode, because I particularly, maybe not you, Leah, but I get questions this particular situation all the time. So they're like, what do? I don't even have my cycle back and I want to start tracking and, you know, try to get pregnant. And night weaning is the number one thing to hopefully get your cycle back. Some women will night wean and get their cycle back like a month later. And some women will not get their cycle back until they completely stop breastfeeding. And so if you are really pressed for time, you're 41, you have a one-year-old that you're still nursing and you love that, but you really want to get, have another baby, then I say wean that baby completely. And I know that that's a hard decision and it's not something that would be recommended, but I think overall the benefit of that baby having a sibling and you having more kids in your family supersedes the chance of that baby having milk for like an additional however long you would have done it. Some women can totally do it, the tandem, but some women can't. And especially when hormones are fragile at the end of our fertile window like this, that's the kind of hard decision that we have to make. And it is sad. And I get that. And it's, and some people are not going to be willing to do that. They're going to say, no, I do not want to wean this baby. And if I can't have another baby, then whatever. And it's like, okay, then that's fine too. I think it surprises people to hear me recommend that, to wean a baby on the earlier side for the chances of having, you know, your cycle back so you can get pregnant again. But that is where I've come in all the years of working with these situations and these nuances. And like, your baby will be okay. Breast milk is absolutely magic. It is top. It is far superior to any other form of feeding an infant. And like, you know, these are big girl decisions we have to make. We're adults. Sometimes it sucks, but there's a benefit. To me, the benefit is greater of having the additional child. So that's where I come from. You may not come from that. That's totally fine. Take it or leave it. But that is where I say, that's where I stand. So anyways, I hope you guys found this interesting. And we can now point to all of the people asking questions about this particular nuanced phase of life here and say, basically, overall, there is definitely risk increase. But a lot of them are overall small when you look at the percentages. I listed off a lot of times risk, you know, like, oh, you're 2 to 3 times more likely to have that situation. But like I laid out more clearly in the stillbirth example, a lot of that, though, still the risk is low, except for the Down syndrome risk. That does have a very steep increase risk as age goes on. And it's still, it's the reality of so many people and it's still worth it. We just have to understand those risks.
Yeah. Beautiful. That was great. Rapid fire as always. You're like listening to a podcast on 1.25 speed.
Oh my gosh. I know. Actually, somebody said that to me. They were like, I normally listen to all of my podcasts at like 1.2, 1.5 or whatever. And I cannot do it with the Healthy as a Mother podcast because of the way that I speak. But sorry, guys, I don't know. It's just.
And then I'm so slow. They're probably like, oh God, I wish I could like slow down Morgan and slow up Leah. That's so funny.
I don't feel like you're slow. You're just normal. I feel like you speak normally.
Yeah, that's funny. I love it. I track you. I got it. It's all good.
Good. Thanks. I'm stimulating your brain and making you live longer to 100. Okay. All right. Bye, you guys. Are you pregnant or you're trying to conceive and you're looking for reliable natural health information about how to have a healthy pregnancy and also prepare for the future steps in motherhood to come, like the birth, the breastfeeding, and the postpartum? Because I have got you. So this is exactly the reason why I made the 6-week pregnancy call. And it's my most comprehensive resource. It's the thing that I absolutely love. I've poured my heart and soul into it. It's all of the things that I wish that every woman knew when they are entering motherhood. It's a pregnancy health course, birth prep series, breastfeeding 101 class, and a postpartum planning course all in one. And normally I run it as a class with live Q&A calls, but now it's available in a content-only format so that you can purchase it at any time and start learning immediately. It's called the lessons only format, and it is just only all of the video lessons that you'll get access to for forever. So log on to milkmedicine.com/lessons-only or check out the link in the show notes.
In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.